Hey everybody, this is Brian, your friendly neighborhood dungeon master and the host of Cannon Fodder. If you want to learn even more about the Fractured Realms and also discover brand new playable content, DM tips and tricks, and interviews with interesting people in the TTRPG community, consider checking out the 20-Sided Newsletter. It's a free bi-monthly email newsletter that delivers a ton of cool content and keeps you up to date on all the latest projects within the 20-Sided podcast universe. To subscribe, you can click on the link below in the show notes or go to 20sidedpodcasts.substack.com. Thanks. Hello and welcome to Cannon Fodder, the supplementary show to the 20-Sided Podcast all about world building and lore. This is an exercise in collaboration, improvisation, and storytelling where we build a world one piece at a time. And each week, our guest will determine which piece we'll be building by spinning the Wheel of World Building! Last week, we learned all about all kinds of games played in the world of Riven, children's games, drinking games, even trendy teen TikTok games. But this week, who knows? I trust the wheel and I surrender myself to its will. And remember, whatever we come up with, no matter how crazy, will become canon within the Fractured Realms and within the 20-Sided Podcast itself. We have the fate of the world in our hands, but no pressure, it's going to be fun. This week we have a very fun guest. You may know him from a lot of places. Maybe you've seen him on, you know, Comedy Central, Colbert, Fallon. You might have heard his songs on programs like Story Pirates or Sesame Street, hello? You may have seen him perform live all over New York, found him hosting one of his shows, Sweethearts of Comedy or Made of Bugs at Brooklyn's Union Hall. Or maybe you even chanced upon a piece of art he left in a secluded corner of a bookstore or coffee shop to be discovered by some lucky person. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know him as Stir Fry from the award-winning D&D podcast Rude Tales of Magic, or maybe as Gelmir Lysander from Oh These, Those Stars of Space. Have you guessed it yet? It's Tim Platt!
Bonjour.
How's it going, man?
Award-winning. That's what I like. It's so funny. It's so funny when you can add award-winning to in front of a project. Mm-hmm. It's like the slightest hint of award, suddenly you're award winning.
I'll take it, whatever.
Yeah, it's perfect. Thank you for having me.
Of course, thanks for being here. Very excited to see what you get to add to this world.
Yes.
You know, we always start the show by talking about your relationship to D&D, and I think you're the first person I've had on who has such a strong relationship to D&D, in like, especially in a podcasting space. How'd you get started playing D&D?
Yeah, so I never played D&D as a kid. I did have like one friend who GM'd a bunch of like Vampire the Masquerade, mm-hmm. is what we sort of did. I think we did a bit of Werewolf too. And then maybe there was one other variant platform that we used together, but it was just like with one group of people, never did D&D, mostly Vampire the Masquerade, if I remember correctly. And then I just never played that kind of game for years and years and years, until really a few months before we started Rude Tales, when Branson and the rest of that group, the rest of the Rude Tales group, were doing, they had a different game. They had already been playing a different Rude Tales, a different D&D game that was DM'd by, I think Joe, but maybe somebody else. And then Branson was doing his first DMing and asked me if I wanted to play with the group. And so I joined the group. And then a few months later, we created the podcast. So really limited, really, really limited. You know, I didn't do, you know, I joined a game that was like DM'd by one of my best friends who had improvised with a bunch. So like I was super game improv heavy. I was coming like, I don't know the rules. Branson was like, it's fine, we'll help you, just play. So I really came into D&D just being like, I'm an improviser, an actor, and comedian. This is another space to do that. And I was really blown away by the opportunity the game provided for cool improv, cool character work.
Absolutely.
Cool comedy. So that's sort of my history with D&D.
And it is, especially for people who like trained in like, you know, UCB or Pit Theater or like, you know, improv comedy. Like the idea of finding the game in an improv scene is exactly the same as like finding the game in a game of D&D.
Yeah, I think it's true. And I'll also say, and this is something that, well, I'll just fucking say it. I don't care. I've always really liked doing sort of long form character-based improv, being the same character over a long period of time. And especially in, like, you know, stage comedic improvisation, there's not a lot of space where you can do that, you know?
Right.
It's like, it's a little more theatrical. That doesn't always work in comedy spaces. And so I had, like, made a podcast, Hampton High, where I was in long-form character improvisation. I was this one character over multiple episodes.
Right.
Before that, I had this, like, stupid project of trying to infiltrate a multi-level marketing scheme through their, like, YouTube algorithms. So I was, like, I played a character who was always... I played a character who was trying to, like, make media like that for a while.
I love that. I gotta find that.
It's... I'll show it to you. It was a swing. But I have always really yearned to find that space of, like, I want to improvise, but I really want to do it as specifically a character that you can watch and grow.
Sure.
And there really wasn't that much space for it beyond these, like, little things I made for myself that were limited in how accessible they were.
Right.
And so D&D for improvisation, yeah, there's, like, a sort of comedic thing, is listening, is all that stuff. But what D&D really gave is, like, you can improvise in this way that I've sort of always wanted to, and always sort of, like, tried to find different ways for. And it was just such a clear container for that type of improvisation, which has been so great, you know?
It's funny, I've never really thought of it as filling a hole that was being left by, like, kind of the improv community, but I guess that is really true. That's a very cool thought. Outside of just D&D, were you a, like, big fantasy or sci-fi person growing up? Are there any, like, kind of touchstone elements of those genres that kind of influence you in creating characters or just kind of your artwork and comedy?
I mean, yeah, I don't think I have as deep of a knowledge of that stuff than some of, you know, definitely my castmates on Root Tales and the Savage Stars. But it was also one of those things where, like, my older brother, brother was really into fantasy and sci-fi. And so I would consume stuff that he gave me, but he was a really passionate consumer of it. And it's one of those things, I don't know if you're a sibling.
Yeah.
But sometimes, especially we're like, he was like less than 2 years older than me. There is a thing that's like, well, he's got that covered, so I don't have
sure.
to like,
he already fills that gap, that hole.
Yeah. You know, so there was like, and so some of that stuff we shared, like, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide, Terry Pratchett. We loved Terry Pratchett.
Sure.
Terry Pratchett has so much stuff that I don't know, but there was like maybe 5 or 6 of his books I would read over and over and over again.
Sure.
Definitely got into comic books and that stuff. Definitely The Hobbit. There's stuff that is in there too. I just didn't have the most, like, I'd take whatever my brother gave me, and if I liked it, I liked it. And if I didn't like it, I wouldn't care about it, you know?
Sure, sure. So it just, like, got lost to the ether.
Yeah, kind of, which is sort of how it feels now. But, like, I've always sort of liked that stuff, and I've always sort of found a lot of comedy in fantasy spaces, specifically fantasy spaces, because there's such, like, a freedom of lore building that is just, like, a very easy way to sort of lock into, like, I mean, I guess what this podcast is basically doing, it's like making lore can be a joke, but then you have to take it seriously. And then that's cool too. You know, like,
it is funny how, because a lot of the guests I have on this podcast are comedians, and, you know, we'll spin the thing, and the first thing out of their mouths is like a big fucking goof. Like, what's the name of the planet? It's Bob or whatever.
Yeah.
But then 15, 20 minutes down the line, they've gotten more and more invested in the planet Bob. And now they're like deep in, why is this planet called Bob? Like, what's the lore behind that? And by the end of it, what started off as like just a fucking goof becomes like, we take that goof and then give it roots and like fully ground it in the world. I had an episode with Jenny Gustafson, who's a good friend. She was on the first season of 20 Sided Podcast, and she built like a city that was like in the world. And after the podcast, like for days afterwards, she would just like text me different things of like, oh, I think this is going to be this. I think this is going to be the city. Yeah. So much so that we had to do like, we did a second episode, just built out the city because it was so much fun.
That rules. I mean, yeah, it's fun. I definitely think like more than consuming a lot of this type of media, which, and then I certainly, whatever popular media was around that time that was like it too. Love dragons. Anything with dragons. I definitely would go to the bookstore and like go to whatever, not the bookstore, like the library and like look up dragons and get whatever book just was about dragons.
Just whatever
dragons,
pops up. You see a tail on a spine of a book. You're like, yep, that's me.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely did that. But there is, it definitely does lock into this thing of sort of being the friendships I had when I was younger. There was so much sort of like fantasy building and playing pretend and sort of like creating code words and being like, and creating fake people and being fake people and sort of like letting a bit sort of spiral into a fantasy world, you know, that feels very much D&D is like sort of locking into that space too, you know?
Yeah. It's just doing the exact same thing just as adults. It's great.
Yeah.
I think it's time to take a look at the Wheel of World Building.
Okay.
So I went ahead, I sent you the link. Go ahead and take a look. There's a bunch of things on there. Some of them are very broad, like, you know, customs and fashion. Some of them are places. Some of them are names. The names that are listed are some of the gods of this world.
Yeah.
Anything that's jumping out at you is something you are interested in talking about, or maybe something you're hoping not to spin.
Yeah, I'm hoping to talk about values.
Values? Okay.
There values.
We go. Values.
It's love real broad. Values.
Who knows what it's going to be? I'm really, I keep saying it on this podcast, and I hope I'm, you know, building it up properly, but I'm really excited for someone to roll idioms.
Oh, God.
Because I'd love to come up with a turn of phrase, but it's also one of those things like, it's either going to go great or it's going to go fine.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, values and all of these god names are the stuff that sticks out to me. I'm looking around more. Slang, I feel like it probably, well, there's probably a way to go there, but my first thought is slang is just going to be a, it's going to be a, slang is going to be like a slower crawl through bit
land. Sure.
You know?
Well, I think it's time to find out. Let's go ahead and spin the Wheel of World Building.
Okay. So do I click?
Yeah. Click it, baby. Let me know what you get.
I got food.
We got food.
I got food.
We got food. Okay.
Wow.
We're going to go deep on the food of this world. So let me give you a mini primer on the world.
Sure.
Started out as a mundane world, much like ours. A little over 1,000 years ago, three elemental titans ripped through the fabric of reality, caused magic to like leak into the world, creating like a D&D type world. These three titans destroyed a like massive Pangaea-like continent, separating it into three continents, each of them taking up residence on one, kind of bending it to their will. So, you know, there was a titan of water that kind of flooded the continent. There was a titan of air that created like a floating miasma along the lowlands. There's a titan of earth that, you know, desiccated the coastlines and created a desert around a massive oasis. Nine heroes rose up, sealed away the titans. Those nine heroes then ascended to godhood. And that's kind of where we are today. But the world is kind of taking on the idea of being fractured, being divided that I've kind of pushed into this podcast and the 20 Sided podcast. There are basically three elemental continents. There is Ceruya, which is a like flooded continent, very Mediterranean, very Venetian, lots of canals. There's Azore, which is a mountainous continent, has like monasteries in the mountains. There are the untethered cities, which are like floating metropolises in the sky. And there's the Dreg Empire, which is like a wasteland society that lives in this wandering miasma in the lowlands. And then there is Veridun, which is half desert, half forest, lots of like elves and woodland, you know, beings in the forest. There's also a, as we've established in a recent episode, there's a massive Times Square like tourist trap area in there. And then in the desert, there is like a warrior society of orcs and things. If we're going to build some food, we should probably pick an area. Which one of those three areas sounds most exciting to you to start?
Flooded.
We're going to Ceruya, baby.
Yeah, flooded. Always was a water guy. So whenever I did like, had to do any kind of game that was like, or like computer game or video game, or just like, I go for, and there's an element thing, I'm going for water. If okay. there's like a magic thing, I'm going for necromancer. Those are like what, those are my go-to.
Hell
water
yeah.
Stuff, necromancer stuff is like what I would always go to as a kid.
So you were always choosing Squirtle and Pokemon. You're always playing Black and Magic.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, pretty much. That's I played the game Heroes of Might and Magic, you know?
I don't know,
you know
one.
This game.
No.
Or like Diablo. I always was necromancer there. Love that stuff.
Love a good necromancer. Going into, so we're in a Italian Venetian like a continent sized Venice, kind of lots of canals, waterways, marshlands. Do you want to start with a like staple food? Do you want to start with like a street food, a snack? What kind of food do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to start with something, if not a vegetable, some not meat or fish substance that is like a sort of a basis. You know, like so many cases, it's like this is like a low food that if it doesn't become a high food, it becomes ubiquitous like baseline.
Right. It is, you know, the rice, the grain, the noodle, the baseline food.
And so I am thinking right now, I'm thinking marsh, I'm thinking algae, I'm thinking, you know, if we're talking about Venice, we're talking about, you know, how these waterways interact with unnatural structures, you know, or wood. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking clams, I'm thinking oysters, I'm thinking mud. Okay.
Mud. Here we go. Okay.
Yeah, we got to start with mud. Okay, there's special mud. The mud is the mud is special. This is special mud.
Okay, tell me about the mud.
This is special mud. This is very special mud. So this mud is so, and what I'm specifically talking about, this is mud in the sort of like Venetian style canals. You know, you're not going to find actually this mud. This is a rarer mud to find in some more natural areas in the sort of like human populated spaces, more urban spaces. This is where this mud has sort of come into focus. And this is because of runoff. This is because of runoff and ores. So you know how in Venice it's like you can like push on the on the ground.
Yeah,
of
like the gondoliers.
Yeah, yes, the gondoliers. So in ancient times, you know, all of this sort of gondolier ore things were made by a very specific tree. And this tree was a magic tree. It was cursed. It was cursed. It was a cursed tree. It was all came from this one tree. And when that stuff touches ground, it would charge. It would just charge, light charge. It was really cool at first. That's why they did it, because it made you go kind of fast. You touch the ground, you're like, whoa. You touch it, whoa.
Hey, baby.
You
know,
it's like really a supercharged thing in the gondolier. And what it did, people thought that charge was electricity. Mm-hmm. People thought that charge was something a little more seismic, you know.
Sure.
Some people actually, at some point, they thought it was finding there was a giant that lived in the bottom of the water, and it was finding these little tickle spots. That was a rumor. But what it actually did, this tree was a life giver, and everything it touched, and the things it touched would get a little bit of life. So it would touch mud. It would touch the mud and the grime at the bottom that would then charge it into this sort of like, it's not sentient. I mean, come on, it's not sentient.
Sure, sure, sure.
But it gave mud a sort of algae quality, an algae flavor, where mud could sort of just like float together and float. You could get like these sort of tracks of organic mud that would like sort of, that could travel around and then be food to sort of larger fare or fish, which helped. Then of course, having this further organic algae-like material brought more fish, brought more birds. Really, it really made some of these cerulean cities a much, much more dynamic for the wildlife that came to the human stuff. They're like, why are we getting these birds here and not in the more natural areas? It's because of the ecosystems created by this mud.
This is way more elaborate than I thought it was going to be. And man, that was a wild ride and absolutely worth it.
Gotta play the game.
So we've got this mud. This like life infused mud from this magic tree. So there's two questions we got to answer with that. One, for sure. Do you want to go the culinary route and like, what is the mud called? How's it used? Or do you want to talk about a little bit about the origin and talk about this fucking tree?
We might want to start with, well, you know what? Let's start with the foods and let's see if that leads any breadcrumbs back into what makes the tree good. You know, because I don't want to, sometimes you don't want to start at the source and then everything's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sometimes you want to take a little jump to somewhere and see what that means about the past, right?
So
let's talk about the food. So this mud found because it would like travel, it would dislodge it.
Sure.
From the floor bed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And would sort of travel up to the top of the water. And then they'd notice that fish were eating it and birds were eating it, you know. And so people would scoop it up with sort of like little nets, and they would try to, originally tried boiling it. They tried boiling it.
Mm-hmm.
No. Tim, you fucking idiot. They dry out the mud.
Okay,
they started
sure.
by drying out the mud, grinding the mud, and sort of using that to flavor, sort of a nutritional yeast, if you will.
Oh, okay, cool.
Dry out the mud, grind it up, and use it as a sort of flavoring, you know? It would be commonly used in fish. You could just put it right over rice if you wanted to, mm-hmm. you know? It was an easy way to zhuzh up a simpler fare.
So is this more of a spice, or is it a, like, protein source that's going on top of things?
There's a little bit of protein. A little bit of protein. Okay. I mean, it's not a substantial amount of protein, but it's a little bit of protein, you know?
Okay.
It's by no means would this be a broccoli substitute.
Sure.
By no means
but would this it is be a broccoli substitute. But it is a ubiquitous topping.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking more of like, honestly, like a nutritional yeast, even like a sort of, but like, I guess I'm thinking like a nutritional yeast. A nutritional yeast.
Sure.
They would dry it, grind it, sprinkle it. That was sort of like how it was first used and how it first gained prominence. And it was just like, it was a thing for lower classes of people, unfortunately, mm-hmm. in this world. Their classes still exist, I'm assuming.
And there's a good food source just floating on the river.
Mm-hmm. So taking it, grinding up. But like, even in these fantasy worlds so molded by gods and magic, innovation is still the most powerful magic of all. After grinding up this stuff, they would, what they found that they could do is wet it again into making sort of doughs, and they can mix it up with some other grains, you know, so that this nutritional yeast could wet it up and make it into sort of doughs, and they start making little flatbreads, roast and make these little flatbreads, and a very specific flavor, you know. This is all mud, by the way.
Of course. Can't forget, we're starting from, this is mud. This society is just eating a lot of mud.
Yeah, but it's a bit salty, a little saline, if you will.
Sure. Oh, of course.
That's what gives it the kick as a spice. You know, it's a little salty. It gives a little kick.
Yeah.
So we're seeing two things: drying, grinding, topping, drying, grinding, re-wetting, mixing with other types of grains, and then letting to rise and become its own sort of, let's say again, compensate a lack of regular yeast, regular grain, mixing in, but it creates its own distinct flavor.
I mean, two questions there. When we make this flatbread through this yeast, what does it look like? I don't know, like a pita bread or something, or does it take on a darker color from the mud, like a pumpernickel or something like that?
I want to go halfway between like a pumpernickel and like a sort of like green dyed cake. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, so like, I'm almost thinking like a matcha cake, but like
Halfway between like pumpernickel and a matcha, because you know, like the algae is sort of a part of this.
Sure.
So that's the sort of general flavor and color of it. And in terms of flatbread, let's think this through. You know, because like
it's spread it out.
You know, because are we thinking of a pita? Are we thinking sort of like a focaccia? Less thick. Mm-hmm. But sort of like a thinner focaccia, maybe shortbread, maybe even some matzah is an opportunity here. Maybe I feel like on its own, maybe it is more of a matzah thing, right?
Okay, sure.
Because it's not yeast.
Right.
It's not.
It's like it's some kind of like substitute-y type thing. So it's still getting a bit of an unleavened quality.
Yeah. So and let's just say we're in a fantasy world. It's like matzah, but it's because of the nature of this thing, it's a little more doughy. A little more doughy. So it's not going to have a crack or that crunch. That
you're still
going to
get a chew.
Yeah, it's still going to be a little chewier. A little matzah, but a little bit chewier.
Okay.
That doesn't sound very good at all. what's great about matzah is the crunch.
Take everything good about this thing and strip it away.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking right now. I guess tortilla is also a thing too, right? Like,
yeah. I was also thinking like, I mean, you could go, and this is getting away from the bread aspect a little bit, but going to like a scallion pancake or like a roti type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a similar vehicle for other things.
I'm going to say that it's traditionally mixed with like corn or yeast to make a more of like a roti type thing. You know,
okay.
Roti's not corn though, is it?
You know, I don't really know.
I don't really know either, but it's very good.
It is. It's great. Had it yesterday.
But if you cook it on its own, it tends to be a matzah-y, but doesn't get that crisp, doesn't get that crunch, which is why people so rarely use it, because it's like not the, alone, it's sort of not the best baked thing. But mixed together, you can get a little fluffier, a little roti, you know.
Right. We have this nutritional yeast type thing. We have it making into a bread. What is either the bread dish, like the kind of like ubiquitous bread dish that is made with this, or the nutritional yeast algae itself, what is that called? What is the name of this ingredient?
The name of it is, so the the ecological turn of it, like the what you would call it as like a ecologist is lucky mud.
Lucky mud. Okay.
Yeah, because it's mud that got the luckiness of being turned alive. So yeah. Lucky mud.
There's a lot of mud out there that's not so lucky.
Yeah, but dried and ground. Dried and ground, it's called puncher-up.
Puncher-up, oh, okay.
Punch-it-up. It's called punch-it-up.
Punch-it-up, okay.
Because it punches up a little.
It's an umami bomb. It's an MSG. Yeah. It's a salt.
Yeah, that's a punch-em-up. Punch-em-up. And that can be like slanged for as like a... Sometimes people just call it punch. Add some punch. Add some.
I also really like the phrase. Yeah, just a pinch of punch.
Yeah, a pinch of punch. You know, I'll get all punch up. So it's lucky mud or punch mud.
Okay.
And you see, I'm sort of like punch mud. It's like
right. It's become this kind of like minced word at this point.
Lucky mud, and then that's why lucky mud is lucky mud, lucky mud, lucky mud, like lucky mud, like
just slowly gets minced into something else.
Yeah, yeah. So it's luck a mud and punch him up.
I love it. So we have this like low, what is like a staple food, like a low food? What is the 11 Madison Park, the 5-star dining experience, the 3 Michelin stars version of this simple dish?
Well, I think a big thing is how it's used in sauces, you know, okay. How it's used in sauces and flavors and how that can be sort of, it can sort of, it really gives a kick to a dish it is. So like, I think like when you have something that's like slightly flavored wasabi where you're like, oh,
whoa.
But flavored enough that it's in the name of the thing where it's like, there's not a lot of wasabi in this dish.
Right.
But
you're going to taste that wasabi.
Yeah. You know, or even like the way that truffle oil can be like, this is like a truffle oil pasta. You're like, oh, well. There's more than just truffle oil, but there's like,
that's what you're going to notice first.
Yeah. 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 So it mostly like in sauces, it will be used to sort of be a variant of like a thing. Okay. You like this curry? Well, this is also the, you know, the punch 'em up curry, you know, right. Oh, you like this sort of bolognese? Well, this is, you know, bolognese, I'll punch 'em up, you know,
bolognese, I'll punch 'em up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like anything else, like fresh ground pepper or something like that. If you're at a nicer restaurant, there's been stuff that's been dried for longer that they're going to crunch right in front of you, or dried in certain heats, or bait, you know, like the way it's dried and the length of how long it's dried can add sort of a wine quality to it that changes, or cheese quality that changes, that the age brings out different subtleties of flavor.
So there is a guy somewhere on Surrey, like bidding at Sotheby's for like a pint of this stuff that was found on like a shipwreck from like 500 years ago. That's like, ooh, it's going to be aged to perfection.
If it's been unground, if it's ground, then it sort of loses that like relatively quickly.
Ah, okay. But if you want to find really old mud,
which is hard because mud, like when you, it grinds itself by moving it around, you know, once it's been dried. So you have to preserve the dried mud before grinding it is like, it's quite a feat.
You know, there is an aspect I hadn't thought of until now, but if this mud is such a staple and it's created by these gondoliers and like the motion of this city, then I would think that there must be, I don't want to say a reverence for it, but a heightened importance put on gondoliers where, you know, in Italy or in Venice, they're kind of taxi drivers or it's just how you get around. But these people are also creating sustenance.
So this tree is no more.
Ooh.
So most of the mud that has happened, most of the lucky mud is just sort of comes from these original things that happened so long ago, you know, like, and it grows on its own, you know, but there is like a, and so there are like some, it's not the rarest thing in the world, but like, it is kind of rare to get this special wood from the special tree. So a lot of that is used in more industrial spaces now, or like some like more historical spaces where it's like, we can still use this. We don't use it too much because it might get torn apart, you know? Right. And there are sort of like scientists who are attempting to, like, can we recreate this tree? Can we do this again? It's like any other resource, it's like, it is exhaustive, can be exhausted, you know? So there is it's not really the gondoliers anymore. That's just like a normal thing. That was like a happenstance of a thing that then like became, it was the wood that became reverential, not the gondoliers.
Gotcha.
Themselves.
Okay. So like all of these, essentially these, like, I really want to look up what the title for this poll is, but all these ore has been gathered up and then used for this. They have been turned rather from like this propulsion device into a full food production mechanism.
Most of the stuff that remains that's really well preserved has been doing that. There's some like stuff in museums, you know, but that like different food agencies want to like get in touch of, you know, to figure out secrets and stuff. But it's like, it's sort of it's a little more guarded by the sort of food production and agriculture complex with some nudges at sort of museum antiquity.
Right. I'm loving it. This is a very fun one. I'm thinking, is there anything else you want to add on to Punch 'Em Up and Lucky Mud? Or do you want to make, I want to make like one more food, maybe make a, you know, a sure. beverage or like a candy or some other thing in this world that would exist.
Well, I definitely think if we're like, there's definitely some sort of shortbread or cookie that is just like, just sugared, you know, heavier right, Lucky Mud, a little bit of yeast and a lot of sugar, you know, or maybe there's like a lot of sugar and Lucky Mud can make like types of taffy, you know, and it's got that beautiful green color. So it's like, its flavor is sort of not the strongest or most preferred. It's a bit too bitter for most candy, but like the color works, so it's used for like
right. It makes a like, you know, green apple like look of a Laffy Taffy type thing. Actually, in our we did an episode with Vivek Netrakamti a little bit ago about holidays, and one of the holidays he invented was a holiday surrounding taffy, where they found there was this, like taffy was kind of ubiquitous as a candy, but on one day of the year, this certain type of taffy created this like blissful, euphoric, like it was like a like the best high possible. And so the whole world kind of got behind the idea of like, that's, everyone gets that day off.
That's cool.
So, I mean, maybe this is kind of the secret sauce to that taffy, where, especially because if it's coming from this magic tree, you know,
Once a year, like that too.
That magic is
it
really
also
potent.
Further justifies it's sort of limited to get that ore. There should be reasons why this ore is like wanted that aren't just like it makes good spice, you know? That okay, cool. I like that.
That's fun.
Yeah, really. There's one component of this whole sort of thing. Of this special taffy that gets you high.
Taffy gets you high one day a year.
Taffy gets you high, man.
Before we move on to the lightning round, is there anything else you want to tag on to the Lucky Mud? Like, you want to talk any more about like the tree itself? Is there any other like flavor profiles you want to talk about?
I feel like we've already brought in the flavor profile as like much as possible without like actually knowing anything about food.
It can do everything.
Here's what I'll say about like the tree. Mm-hmm. I have an impulse to not be too definitive about this, because if it's actually in a world that you are playing with, I feel it's like if this stuff does come into play at all, like that should be discovered. That's the importance of
you
a tree like
discovered.
That.
Yeah,
I want that to be in your control. So I don't want to say too much about that. I think we've like, or maybe we can come up with one thing together about that. Be it its history, it's the physical substance, it's the lore behind it, or like,
you know, let's put a pin in that. I'm gonna move on to the lightning round, and there's actually within that there's a little bit we can do, I think.
Cool.
So that is Lucky Mud. That is Punch It Up. We have two segments on the show. The first is the Wheel of World Building. The second is
Lightning Round.
This is the segment of the show where I ask three questions very quickly and we answer them at a slow, meandering pace. The first question, and this is kind of getting back into the tree aspect, what is a rumor that you have heard in this world? And I'll say maybe specifically about this tree. Could be true, could be false, could be inflated, underplayed. What's a rumor?
There's a rumor that this was the first tree, you know.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
That is the first life form. And like its roots gave life to everything. You know, that there is a rumor that this was sort of patient zero for life.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that.
Whether it's not true or not.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
The second question, in Cerulea and kind of in this culinary scene, what is the name of a person? And what is the most interesting thing about them? Could be a characteristic, a physical feature. What's the name of a person and most interesting thing about them?
Oh, okay. Sly Cod Old Eater.
Okay.
That's Sly Cod, first name, S-L-Y-C-O-D,
Love
Old
it.
Eater, last name. Sly Cod, Old Eater. she is chiefly known as being the person who, like, industrialized the creation of Lookamud, you know?
Okay.
She's quite old now, but she sort of, like, through nefarious supposed means, I mean, well, let's not even say, but there's a lot of theories about how she did it. She collected, like, the wealth of remaining wood like this.
Sure.
And sort of, like, owns a island, owns a coastline where some stuff is doing, like, in factory spaces,
right.
But some of it is being done, like, out in a sort of open marsh that then can sort of flow downstream in different spaces.
Kind of feels like an old, like a Rockefeller or, you know, a Kennedy, like one of these old money, the wealth goes back to the start of the wealth, essentially.
Yeah, it's she is, like, quite beloved because she has, like, created a seemingly sustainable version of how to make this stuff that mm-hmm. does flow, that she then farms and sells and has, like, its own production in that way. But it also does flow downstream. So, like, there are, like, with her in control, there simply is more going out, at least right. in certain areas, you know? And so, and she's a great benefactor to sort of communities and towns. But there is some question how she actually was able to collect all of this. All of these, the special wood, and how she has sort of, because it's unclear. What we know is that, like, you touch the mud and it goes. It is unclear how she has improved upon or maximized what was written done by accident. It's
right,
like
right.
a mystery. It's like Coke, you know. And it's unclear what else she has brought to life or given life to.
This is, man, this is a bounty for me as a DM of, like,
Sly Cod Old Eater.
Sly Cod Old. And especially, like, the idea that gets to me is there is, like, the benefactor aspect of there's, like, runoff of, like, this, like, free food that's trickling down, but maybe yeah. it's only going to certain areas. Who knows if it's, like, good free food? It's like, oh.
It is at very, at very least advertised or promoted.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, it is actually in her best interest to keep that runoff from flowing downstream, but sure. it's important for her that this stuff is spread around. That is advertised.
Okay.
Whether or not it's true or not, but it is, like, suggested, and it is, like, an interesting part of this business practice.
Sly Cod Old Eater. Oh, she's definitely coming up. Definitely coming up in a future season.
Yeah.
Our last question is a two-part question. I always like to end the show by letting our guests ask a question about they have about the world for our next guest to answer.
Sorry, quick question.
Yeah, go for it.
The tree, the wood is called croak. Like croak. Oak.
Okay.
It's a croak tree.
Is that spelled C-R-O-K-E or C-R-O-A-K?
Spelled like the frog.
Croak spelled like tree. The frog. Croak tree.
Is that croak? Yeah, it's made of croak. Oh, wow. Does it work? It used to work. It's one of those old ones. It used to work, but not anymore. That's rare. I know. Croak.
It's a little croak tree.
Croak
I really like
tree.
The idea of someone, you know, coming into a super fancy house and seeing, like, a chair made of croak or something, but, like, the legs of it are all, like, you know, covered in vines because this thing keeps tapping the wood or something.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, and that's the thing. It's like, how did you, this is crazy. Like it's a thing. Like, did you see that thing that they have? You know, like, and the hyper wealthy right. would be like, oh yeah, people have that. Everyone's like, that's no, I don't think you know how wealthy your friend is. Like, that's crazy.
Right. That's a kind of fucked up. It's like golden toilet wealth. It's like, it's crazy that you have that, but also why?
I think of it as like a toilet made of ivory.
Yeah.
Where it's like, do you know what it took to get that? And that's how they're using it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like crazy, you know?
This is messed up. We could do so much with this. And instead yes. you're sitting on it.
Yeah. And like, and this, did they get this in an ethical way? Like, how did they?
Right. How are you coming across this much of this stuff?
Yeah.
And who yeah,
that
is
isn't
this?
Being that isn't being used, you know?
Right.
There are some croak wood frames which have been used for art. And let's just say there has been one or two figures in the painting that have stepped out into the real world.
Ooh. this is just truly a bounty for me to play with.
Croak tree.
This is truly just a gift. You've given me a great gift here that I'm very excited to play with.
Cool. Okay, sorry, but I cut
no,
you
no,
off.
No.
Your, a question
I've
for me.
I've never been
the next
more
person.
Happy to be cut off in my entire life.
Great.
We do always end allowing our guests to ask any question they have about the world for our next guest to answer. Last week we had on Elise Morales, and she had this question for you.
My question for the next guest to answer mm-hmm. is, who is this world's most notorious criminal?
Yes. Hell yes.
Yeah.
Great fucking question.
And I want the whole backstory, everything, like.
Okay. Okay,
what
Elise.
Made them that way. What okay. They did.
What's
are
their
they
signature style or whatever?
Yes. Modus operandi, everything.
Notorious criminal.
Most notorious. We're talking, I mean, first comes to mind is like an Al Capone.
Yeah. Whole world, not just continent, whole world. That was what they said. Yeah,
I'd say whole world.
Here's my quick question. What happened to the bodies of these like celestial beings, these like celestial elementals?
They were each sealed away into these like kind of prism-like orbs and okay. have been like rendered inert. Okay. Though at the end of season one of the 20 Side podcast, we learned that maybe these prisons are beginning to fail.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. What's the main currency in this world?
And we had a whole episode about currencies too. There is kind of a gold standard, right? Like gold is accepted everywhere, but depending on the nation, there are different currencies as well. There's a, like a tinkerer society that has like these like microchip currencies that like stack on top of each other and build. There's, you know, monastic societies that like trade seeds and stuff.
Okay. And what's the baseline theory on sort of how magic is sort of used or how do people partake in magic?
Magic is... It is not ubiquitous, but it is not particularly rare. Like most people have like a low level, like abilities to do like mechanically, like cantrips or maybe first level spells.
Yeah.
But then, you know, going like, you know, even finding a fifth level character is exceedingly rare. And then getting up higher is, you know, rarer still.
Okay. Okay. So name Ethan Cardamom.
Ethan Cardamom.
Ethan Cardamom, also known by Johnny Card.
I gotta write that down.
Also known by Johnny Card. And the reason he is the most notorious criminal is because he has, quick question. Is there a prison system?
We haven't actually gotten into that. The only known prison.
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's less fun. The only known prison is in Saruya, and it's called the Drowned Oubliette. And it's basically like a pit in the that's like kind of filled with water that you sink the worst criminals into.
Johnny Card is the most notorious criminal because he is the only criminal in the history of this land to decide that he actually to take himself out of the equation. He decided he was so bad that he's decided to like live in the cave on his own. And he won't let anyone arrest him. He won't let anyone else hold him accountable. He's got to hold himself accountable. It's a very like, he's like sort of had a come of, he knows he's bad. He'll always be bad. He'll be bad if he goes out and does anything else. He's killed. He's murdered. He stole. He famously sucked magic out of the throats of people who got in the way of his thievery.
Oh, wow.
And he used that through a special device or magical discovery that is up to you to figure out.
Sure.
He has moved to like a sort of isolated mountainous area that like people have tried to sort of go to him and like take him to their own spaces for justice or judgment.
Right.
And he kills them all. Always sends one back and says, "Leave me alone. I'm punishing myself." Some people have come up to him to learn about his ways, and he has sort of become like a sort of a cult figure about how he believes criminals should suffer. And he's got all these techniques of how he himself suffers. He like of pain he gives himself, of like of work he gives himself to do. He's made himself write a novel, and that was like the worst suffering he could inflict upon himself is writing a novel.
Okay.
And so he is writing a novel, and no one can see it because he's like still suffering to make it.
Right.
But people won't know about it because it's supposed to be semi-autobiographical, but he's not sure. And he is, but the most famous thing he did, was he drank the ocean.
He drank the ocean.
And then he threw it up. And it was after that. Something happened after that. He was changed. He was changed after that. Not better, still bad, but something clicked where he's like, I can't be in a position to do something like this again. And I will do it again unless I'm alone. So the mountain he's at, very far from water.
Sure.
Very far from water. Doesn't drink water. Doesn't drink water. That's part of the reason how he punishes himself. Main ways he punishes himself, not drinking water, and he's working on a novel.
So you're just describing most people in their 20s. He's being a 20-year-old.
I've always considered them villains.
That's true. This guy is crazy. drinking the water feels like, you know, Despicable Me, Gru stealing the moon. It's like so huge and insane. Like the idea of like how you could hold the world hostage if you had the ocean is insane. And then the idea of he's had some kind of revelation for whatever reason, he's taken himself out of the equation. What is interesting for me is how much of a hair trigger he must be on, where if anything could possibly push him over the edge and bring him back into play.
Yeah.
Like the queen's off the board, pawn gets the other side, coming right back on.
Yeah, and it is understood and believed and true that he is punishing himself. It's right. Like, no one's like, oh, he's trying to get away scot-free. It's like, people used to try to bring him down, but it became pretty clear this dude is punishing himself. He really is. And how that works is like, you know, mostly through Walden writing a novel, but a lot of stuff too that people try to like come and learn from. And there is a fear that what if at some point he thinks he's had enough punishment, you know?
Right. Oh my God. Man.
Johnny really, card.
Really. It's given me so many, all these things, all these traits.
Lore is a game. Lore is a game.
Lore is a fucking game. I love this podcast so much. I've really created a great out for myself where I've got to make a D&D podcast and I just have this other podcast where people help me make it.
This is great. Pretty smart, to be honest.
And it's just a lot of fun. I get to talk to a lot of fun people about goofy stuff. Fucking love it. Ethan Cardamom, Johnny Cards. We have an answer to that question. What is a question you have, big or small, about the world for our next guest to answer?
What was the one song that changed the world, you know? And like, you can take that seriously in terms of like, actually had some like material thing that changed the world, or was like, what was the, I want to hold your hand, or something like that. Like what was like, and give me the story of the musician, give me the contours of why that song was such a big deal, how it affected culture, you know, whatever happened to that musician, whether they have a big career after that, you know,
or were they one hit wonder?
Yeah.
It's a great question. I don't know the answer. We'll find out next time on Cannon Fodder. To steal a line from Walter Cronkite, that's the way it is, ladies and gentlemen. Load up all that lore, fire it directly into the Fractured Realms. That is it for this episode of Cannon Fodder. Before we go, Tim, you want to tell people where they can find you? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, my Instagram is at IamKingBozo. My Twitter is at TimothyPlatt. Check out Rude Tales of Magic and Oh These Those Stars of Space. Those are the two podcasts that I'm doing. If you're in New York, I perform all around all the time. Follow me and figure it out. I also host shows at Union Hall, Sweethearts of Comedy, and Made of Bugs. Yeah, that's the stuff. That's the stuff about Tim Boba.
I'm going to put all those links in the show notes. And cool. I strongly recommend check out Rude Tales. Check out Oh, These Stars of Space. They're both fantastic. You playing Stir Fry is incredibly fun.
Thank you.
And if you want to see all of today's world building put into action, you should check out our parent show, The 20-Sided Podcast. Season 2, Prisoners of the Static, is airing now. You can also find all 11 episodes of our first season titled Escape from the RMS Titanfall on any podcasting services you can imagine. If you're listening to this podcast right now, you know exactly how to find your podcast. Type in 20-Sided Podcast, check it out. It's a lot of fun. But for now, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.